The scene is a hill on the edge of no man's land in the 24th Division sector of the Central Korean Front. The time is midnight. It's black night. There is a full moon somewhere above the clouds. Rumors of the anticipated communist attack have been flying for 2 weeks. Phase two of the Red Spring Offensive is due. The men finger their weapons nervously in their foxholes, and artillery observers call down fire on any moving object in the blackness ahead. Some of the objects are real, some imaginary, some not even enemy.
Hey, hold that fire down there! Hold that fire down there! Item two, this is 3-5. Are you getting it from our side? Over.
Roger, I think they thought they saw something up there and they were firing in the hills. I stopped them on that.
Tell me, got friendly troops up there. Item two.
Bob Pierpoint leans against the edge of an oversized foxhole, peering into the blackness ahead, watching the artillery shells burst in violent flashes not 500 yards before him. The artillery should seal off every avenue of enemy approach, but you can't be sure in the darkness. A man new to combat is ushered through his baptism of fire to the accompaniment of the combat soldier's catechism. A combat correspondent is no different. He recites his catechism carefully, and every line begins with, "What's that?"
What's that outfit down there, Captain?
That's enemy patrols down in there.
Where are those fires burning?
That is napalm or poo gases set off by artillery that we've had placed out there during the day.
Mm-hmm. What's this small arms fire off to our left?
That's a patrol working around Charlie Company.
What's that?
That's a VT barrage, artillery VT, trying to knock out an enemy machine gun nest that's working its way up towards our Charlie Company on our left flank.
They're liable to be sorry they ever got into this.
That one went off right above us, didn't it?
As the outposts report movements, presumably enemy, just ahead, the artillery observers call for fire closer and closer to the front lines. The hairbreadth tolerances of precision implements of war are stretched to the breaking point. Then it happens. Soldiers call it a short round, a shell that doesn't go quite as far as it should. That can mean many things. A yawn on the part of a machinist at Springfield Arsenal where the shell was being tooled. A badly packed charge of high explosive. An artilleryman who mistook 043 for 044. But whatever the cause, the result is a 50-pound load of steel and TNT going off within your own lines. Pierpoint had his recorder running when he experienced a short round and came up with something that has rarely, if ever, been recorded before. Listen for the whine of the shell as it goes by and explodes just ahead.
We have just hit the dirt. I don't know whether this tape is still going, but I'm awful low right now. What was that that came over?
That was artillery.
Time to raise that thing.
Tell him to raise that thing, he asked the captain. The captain agrees.
This is 5-3. Request that element firing on my left... in the area immediately to my left, Ray, lift his fire. It is coming very, very close to our position. Over.
So that's where you guys disappeared down that hole, huh? I'm sort of telling Charlie on that. I was the last man in.
All along the line, a massive assault is launched by the communists. In this sector, the attack is still a probing, infiltrating action. In the 2nd Division sector of the 10th Corps front, one of the bloodiest pages in military history is being written. More than 10,000 communists left dead on the field with casualties at the rate of 36 to our one. The word filters along from unit to unit. Fox Company feels the tension rise, gets more watchful if that's possible. The enemy is close, real close.
Now it's just 1 o'clock, straight up and down on the morning of the 18th, and we're still out here on the hill with Fox Company and Captain Sutton looking down at Chinese throats as they try to advance up the valley here. Whoops. That was a big one. How close would you say, estimate, that the closest enemy troops are?
Right now, probably 300 yards, I imagine. in some sectors, some closer than others.
Why don't they shoot at us?
They're artists. Sneaking. They get as close as they can with the first wave using hand grenades alone.
Uh-huh.
And try to get within hand grenade range of you before they disclose their own position.
I suppose it's a good idea to keep down off the ridges, though, so you don't silhouette. Whoops. They're with the artillery back of us again, getting a little too close.
They claim this is a regiment in here right now working at us, in this two-battalion zone here. And if that's a regiment on the left, then there's another one on our right here, because they run in threes. Generally, three regiments to a division.
Well, then they've got three regiments against, what, two battalions?
Two battalions, yes. Of course, they lose a regiment, they throw another one in. It doesn't make any difference to them.
Yeah.
Three regiments against two battalions. Roughly 6,000 Reds against 1,800 UN troops. Someone in the company CP detects a movement behind them. Have they been outflanked?
Nothing behind us.
Not that.
Somebody behind us here.
Mines and crypt flares go off in the barbed wire entanglements ahead. A weird battle takes place in the alternate darkness and magnesium flare brilliance. Every available weapon is brought to bear on the enemy, whose number is still undetermined.
A couple of mines went off.
Is that in our area?
Yes, that's leading up to our right flank now.
You see him there?
Fire mission, Asmus. 6,000. Mark concentration. 2, 3. Enemy small arms fire.
They are really having a firefight up there on the hill now. Top of that ridge, you know?
Yes, they are.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Here, on the night of the 17th, morning of the 18th, and in the days following, the United Nations 8th Army beat off the massed assault of the Communist armies, inflicting severe losses on the enemy. In the east, a temporary breakthrough was rapidly sealed off and expunged. Then the whole UN line gave up its defensive posture and went over into the attack, cutting retreating Communist units to shreds, taking 10,000 prisoners, recapturing Huachan Reservoir, and generally moving to positions north of Parallel 38. There, the Chinese and North Korean troops managed to erect a line of defense and held for the time being against the armored Allied spearhead. Bob Pierpoint looked out over the valley the morning after the big attack, surveyed the ground ahead that had been deserted by the Reds, and watched his good friends of Fox Company move slowly, carefully, into the first phase of the counterattack, the pursuit of the beaten enemy.
Right now it's about 5:30. That's jump-off time for the 24th Division to move forward on a scheduled attack. Dawn is just beginning to break here on Hill 831, and it's strangely peaceful. We're looking out over the valley that the infantrymen are going to move into today. The mist is still hanging low over the ridges, the lower ridges down there, and small fingers of mist which reach up toward us here on the top of the hill. Far across the way we can see another high mountain surrounded by fog and mist, almost as if it were coming out of the middle of an ocean. The only sound is that of artillery, which is being poured into the valley still down here. Every once in a while, one of the infantrymen shoots his automatic, cracks out through the morning dawn, but we haven't really seen anything, and probably the boys are firing more from nervousness and to feel out their weapons than anything else. Strangely enough, above the roar of the artillery and the whine as the shells go overhead, we can hear the whistle of the early morning birds. It's almost hard to believe that birds could still exist up in this torn mountainside, which has been fought over now for several days, which has been pounded by artillery, by air, and by all sorts of small arms. But still, as the sun begins to rise out to our right here in the far east, the birds begin to come out and almost seem as cheery as ever, in spite of the hell that's going on around them. Just after 5 o'clock, when the attack was supposed to start, why, the chow truck arrived back here at the backside of this hill, and of course the officers figured they ought to have a little breakfast before they started out on this jaunt that could be a very, very rough deal.
You are listening to Hear It Now, CBS's weekly document for air based on the week's news. The program continues immediately after this pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is WDWS-CBS in Champaign-Urbana. It starts Monday, June the 4th, and lasts the entire week. The store-wide clearance end-of-season sale at Pat Kane's at 202 North Neal in Champaign. 1/4 off on nationally advertised merchandise. What a wonderful opportunity to buy suits, topcoats, and slacks at a savings. Fur felt hats, too, and long sleeve sports shirts, dress shirts with regular and French cuffs. Shop at Pat Kane's, Monday store hours from 12:30 to 9 p.m.
This is program 25 on Hear It Now. Once again, here is the editor of Hear It Now, Edward R. Murrow.
Isaac Walton, who knew both God and the stream, once said, "The art of angling begat habits of peace and patience in those that professed and practiced it." Last Sunday, a minister in Buffalo said that angling was not enough.
The devil, not wanting his house to fall, isn't going to tempt anyone to go to church. But he's at his best when he gets a fellow to go fishing instead of going to church.
That was the Reverend Leslie Hallett, once a wrestling champion and college football star, now the canon of St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Buffalo. The Reverend Hallett, who knows how to mousetrap a tackle, also would seem to know how to mousetrap the devil. He sees no sin in going fishing on Sunday, provided people stop at church first. And he sees no objection to fishermen's boots or jackets, in moderation.
Few clergymen would condemn a man for fishing on Sunday in these days if he first consecrated the day by attending a service. In this busy world, relaxation is mighty important, but worship is even more so. You might have a spiritual experience while fishing, though it's questionable that any man is raised to spiritual heights when a 5-pound walleye has just flipped the hook. For those who rise early, when they're really biting, the 11 o'clock hour is ideal. For those who tackle things a bit more leisurely, the 9:30 celebration or the 8 o'clock is tailor-made. No clergyman of my acquaintance would object to fishing togs at an early service if you don't have time to change. Let us pray.
In New York City, there was a less skilled but slightly more excited kind of angling going on. Macy's had told Gimbel's, and the two great stores were at war with each other.
Approximately 1 million pieces of merchandise were marked down last night and reflect the liberated consumer savings. You can be sure that every price-fixed item Macy's can sell at a lower price without jeopardy to our complete assortment will be sold at lower prices.
Nobody but nobody beats Gimbel's at the job of keeping prices down. Whenever Gimbel's is undersold on any item, It's not for long. The minute our shoppers report any store has a price lower than Gimbel's, down comes the Gimbel price.
On Monday morning, the Supreme Court of the United States met in solemn session. The justices read a decision reversing a New York State ruling on the Fair Trade Act. In a matter of minutes, Macy's had the flash. By afternoon, the first announcement was out. They were cutting prices on 6,000 items. Gimbel's almost immediately followed suit. Both stores sent their espionage agents, they call them comparative shoppers in the trade, into action. These were their intelligence reports.
Home, Barbara, on the gallon of Super Chemtone, Gimbel's is $4.68, and we're $4.64. We'll have to take markdown. You're going to $4.36. Okay.
And across the street at Gimbel's,
comparison office again, more markdowns. Hudley at Parma Biscuits, from $2.69 to $2.53. Schlivowitz's or somebody, Schleppers ginger beer is $3.39 to $39 to $37.
By Tuesday, the battle was on. The shoppers were storming the barricades, which open at 9:45 and close at 6. In the afternoon, it rained and the tide was stemmed. The next day was a holiday and time for regrouping in the aisles. Thursday broke bright and clear. There was almost mayhem on the escalators. Not in many a Christmas season had either store experienced such a rush. It sounded like this.
They're buying like it's the end of the world. They really are. You think that everything is going to fall in pretty soon because the people here are piled up a mile deep.
Form a double line behind the people at the counter, please. That's all, madam. Thank you.
When I get home tonight, I'm going to stop.
Never seen anything like this before.
Oh, I've been on since 9:15. I've no let up. I'm hungry.
Will you take my order, please?
I'm sorry. I'm just the cashier. Somebody will be right with you.
Your famous squeeze-o-matic. Don't stoop. Don't ring. All automatic. $4.49 all over the country, $3.95 in Macy.
Well, I don't think it ever existed in the world history, a sale like this.